you know, when I first started out, you're all creative and you haven't really developed skills in the area of business, understanding business, understanding money, understanding how that world works, and, you know, being able to develop skills in those areas has, I mean, you have to know how to budget, right? You have to know how to budget. And even after you've budgeted, you go on to set, things go wrong and you go over budget, and you need to know how to problem solve in those areas. So, you know, you're able to take those skills and you're able to apply them in your own life.
Creatives who live their art deserve to be heard. This is the philosophy behind Creative Allies, a podcast from the V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program. For these conversations, we invite experienced creatives to share their stories as a gesture of allyship to emerging creatives, lending their support, advice, and encouragement. Hi, I'm your host, Lerato Sokulu.
And I'm your other host, Carol Williams. It's so good to have you with us again.
Oh my word, this is like my second home. I wish we could just chat and chat and chat until I don't know what.
Just forever. And like about such cool things and meeting such great people. Hey?
Yeah, such valuable information. Mm. Like we're basically running a school.
100%. Call me headmistress? No.
That sounds kind of dirty, so I don't know.
Maybe not. Yeah.
Anyway, so today's episode is about how to turn your passion into a paycheck.
Yeah.
Have you managed to do that?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, because bills, bills, bills.
Yes. I mean, we're here. So.
Yeah, we're here and we are clothed and fed. So, yeah, I think so.
Creativity versus commercial appeal. Uniqueness versus popularity. Passions versus paying bills. Mm. These are the contradictions all creatives must face pretty much on the daily.
And are they contradictions?
I mean, they work hand in hand, I would think. And it's not just creatives, it's everyone, I think.
But they can feel like contradictions.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And if you're serious about a career in this industry, you'll have to ask yourself a variation of the following questions. Mm. How do you keep your creative spark alive when you're working for the man?
The man.
Because the man wants his tax.
The man does. Yeah, and even if you don't work for the man,
he wants his tax.
Right.
How can you develop and manage multiple income streams? Mm. I feel like if you have multiple income streams, it becomes easy to manage them because money is just constantly flowing in. I don't think there's really a problem there.
No, but maybe it's more around how do you, because obviously connected to those income streams is work. So how do you
manage the workflow?
How do you manage the workflow?
I see. All right.
Perhaps, yeah.
And what does it look like to foster an entrepreneurial mindset? Mm. Because when you're a creative, you're essentially a businessman as well, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, exactly.
To help us explore these questions, we've invited Fezeka Mkabela, who's dialing in from Durban, my hometown, and Brendan Murray, both award-winning creatives, to share their thoughts. Fezeka, you're an author, film director, and producer. You've worked on documentaries and web series and have appeared on the Mail and Guardian 200 Young South Africans list. Can we give a
bow, 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 bow?
Yes, yes.
You're also the founder of film production company Ingwe Studios. Thank you so much for joining us today, Fezeka. It's so great to have you with us.
Oh, it's so lovely to be here. I'm so grateful that I was called onto this podcast and I can't wait to have great conversation.
We're also joined by Brendan Murray, a VO artist, film and TV actor, stage performer and comedian. Brendan, you're also classically trained. You're a trained Shakespearean actor.
Oh, yes.
Who has hosted burlesque circuses.
I have.
And appeared in several international films and television series and on local radio stations.
Absolutely.
It's so great to have you.
It's a pleasure
that
to be here.
That voice.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Wow.
Well, you know, it's just, I once, when I was very, very young, I think I saw the Hey Days advert on TV. You know, the it's Hey Days. I was like 4. Mm-hmm. And someone told me that guy makes money.
What year was that?
That was like,
were we born?
You guys might not have been born, but someone told me that guy, for saying those words, actually made a lot of money.
Oh.
So even from when I was like really, really young, I was trying to imitate that voice.
Yeah.
And then I also happened to go deaf for a little while as a kid because I had weird like body stuff. And so I just developed this really muscular voice.
Yeah. Out of all the guests that we've had on Creative Allies, I have to say Brendan is the most ready. You
excited.
Are just from the get. You are here. You are present.
That may just be how I choose to live my life.
I love that. Because I love that.
I just feel like, well, while you're there, you got to invest fully. Yeah. If you're somewhere else, then that be half there. Of you is not doing anything in that other place. It's just taking away from what you're doing right here.
Yeah. And what we're doing right here, I believe, is pretty important, isn't it?
Agreed. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's take it from your early careers. I'll start with you, Brendan. How did you get into acting? When did you discover that you had a love for filmmaking?
Wow. So film came a little bit later. I started acting. I did okay at school and I could have done a bunch of different things, but my parents were both teachers, couldn't afford to send me to university. So I had to get a student loan or a scholarship or something like that. And so I had a few options and I decided to kind of throw them all in the bin and try and audition for UCT Drama School.
Okay.
Because the reason why I did that is I did the research and they see about 400 people a year and they only take 25 to 30 people.
Wow. So
and the fact of the matter is, I knew looking ahead that being an actor is 80% unemployment rate out there. Oh. You've got to be in the top 20% just to be employed.
Yeah.
So if you want to be doing well, you've got to try and keep yourself in the top maybe 2%.
Yeah.
So I wanted to try and get a strong signal from the beginning that I had something. I had no skill. All I had was talent. I had a love of doing drama. I did school plays and that, but my school didn't offer drama as a subject. I just really rolled the dice. And not only did I get in, I got in and I managed to get a very small amount of money per year as an academic scholarship because I did well in my English literature and my drama studies and all of that other stuff. So I didn't have to have too large a student loan. I still ended up with like a massive, almost 100,000 rand in student loans at the end because it's one of the most, weirdly enough, the second most expensive degree at the university. It goes medicine and then drama.
I don't know why, because the jobs don't match.
It seems wrong.
It's from a university perspective. You need so much space to teach drama. You need theaters. You need dance halls. You can teach medicine in a shoebox if you have a cadaver. I'm not recommending that you put a cadaver in a shoebox. But
it could get quite messy.
Just from a university perspective. And so once I did that, I managed to get very lucky and I got a job at the Baxter, basically moving furniture. But in a very big play. It was Amadeus by Peter Shaffer. Brian Murray, a South African-American actor who's won a Tony Award. He was playing Salieri.
Wow.
You had Jeremy Crutchley as the Emperor. You had just top to bottom, incredible talent.
Yeah.
And I literally took the job. I was moving set. I didn't have a single line, but I had to be at every single rehearsal. And you become an integral part of the play because it's how things move. We were these ghostly spirits that were like moving us through
dressed
the space.
In all black.
And I thought at that time, you know, I'm in at the Baxter. This is it. I'm not going to have to try and find work ever again. I've made it. It was 20 years before I worked at the Baxter again.
Sure.
Literally last year was the first time I worked at, well, I did do comedy at the Baxter, but in terms of doing acting, I did Othello with Lara Foote last year. And she actually directed Amadeus. So I did Lara and then 20-year break and then Lara again.
Oh, wow.
So getting into film acting, I was doing theater and voiceovers and making enough money. I was spending most of my money doing like countercultural theater and like really a daring art, which is never supported well enough in the moment. But in hindsight, it's very important and it feeds into like the culture and the zeitgeist of the other creators around you. And then I just had to be like, I need money. So how can I make enough money for almost the whole month in a couple of days and then leave me free to spend the rest of my month creating and finding other creative ways to increase the amount of cash that's coming in?
You know, you said something at the beginning there where you say when you are about to study acting, only 20% of the class makes it. And it was the same for me when I entered my degree to study acting. The principal of the school then was like, there was 180 of us in the room. And he said, only 5 of you are actually going to be working actors. And I felt so discouraged. I was like, why would you say that? We're paying 40K to come to the school.
Be here.
What do you mean I'm not going to make it? The slogan literally said famous for life. Like,
I feel
that's the
down.
Marketing department. And good for them. I feel like people don't say that enough in the beginning of a creative degree, because the fact of the matter is you will only have 5 out of those 120 who are working as actors.
Yeah.
But the other 115 people, they work as writers or producers, or they go into advertising or they go into education. One of my classmates actually now runs a massive multinational, it's called Buzz. She's named Hanneke Mackie. She's amazing. But it does after school drama classes with children, but it builds into maths and STEM and all of these other things. And she does it in multiple different countries. And what she does is she employs young drama graduates, people who are creative, people who've got
drama,
the skill of storytelling.
Such a good life skill, hey?
Yeah,
I suppose also what this tells me then is that there's so many other disciplines within the acting industry. So it's not that you're not talented enough. It's just the nature of the beast that we're in. But there are other disciplines that you can do. I'm going to come to you, Fezega. You studied at WITS. Tell us about your schooling. How did you get there? What interested you in terms of filmmaking?
You know, it was very interesting because when I was in matric, I knew that I wanted to be an actor. So just putting that out there. And I fought very long and hard with my mother. She was not having that at all. And you know, it was very difficult. It was very difficult. So what we ended up agreeing on is that I go to film school because she felt as though film school was more stable. It was something that she could understand. And I remember going into film school and I hated it. I hated it for the first year or so because I knew that I wanted to perform. I wanted to tell stories.
Yeah.
But over time, it gradually grew on me because I realized that I really loved to write. Screenwriting was something that was a very integral passion in my life. And it helped me to express myself in a way that I didn't know I could, to be able to tell my own stories and delve into my own creative mind and be able to put that on a page. So it grew on me over the years and I had to adapt to the environment that I was in. Yeah. And post graduation, I started a company. It was an absolute fail. My company was called Films by Fezega.
Yeah.
And the concept behind it was I wanted to create YouTube videos for upcoming YouTubers at the time because they did not have the infrastructure and I did. And I had the skills to shoot and edit their videos and upload them online. But it quickly failed because a lot of people didn't really have the money, I would say, to pay for
the production,
the service that I was providing. Yeah. And I found myself stressed because I had to pay bills. And I started an internship at NEMISA. It's called the National Electronic and Media Institute of South Africa. And that is when I really rediscovered passion for becoming a film producer. I was in that space and we were, you know, shooting a lot of documentary style films in very rural parts of South Africa. And that was when I really, really discovered what I wanted to do and who I wanted to be in this industry.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned something at the beginning of how you didn't adapt quickly to being in film school. And a lot of people glamorize filmmaking. I find it to be the most tedious thing or job you can ever have. It is so annoying to be on set, especially as an actor or a director, because it's
so
repetition.
Much time,
Repetition. Do that again.
Repetition.
Do that again. Do that again. Repetition. And you have
with
to be
life.
Excited.
You have to bring it
every time.
Because you've been shooting on this fried chicken commercial for 12 hours, and now it's your close-up, and you've had 18 of these legs, and now this is the one that you have to really enjoy. And you'll be there until you enjoy it.
I'm so glad you stuck to that, because I feel like it's a really hard job, but once you get into the flow of it and you get that internal dedication, everything just kind of flows. I'm going to bring it back to you, Brendan. You said it took you 20 years to get to where you are now. So looking back, what were the challenges that you faced as a young emerging actor?
I think the biggest challenge was I could see why the art had value, like it had real value. But that value isn't monetary value. You can't make like the most amazing play if people aren't going to see it, or if they aren't going to attend. You're not going to be able to make enough money back to make it worthwhile. But money isn't what makes it worthwhile. The hardest lesson for me to learn was that these things that I do, when I create these things and I end up producing them myself with money I've made from elsewhere, doing it is the value. Now, perhaps you manage to get a show together that runs really well, and then you can start touring it and taking it around. But if you want to go to the Makanda Festival, you're going to be paying 15, 20,000 rand just to rent a place for your cast to stay during the festival.
Yeah, there's so many other costs.
Well,
yeah.
Not just so many other costs. There are so many other people in the chain who are trying to also make money off what you are busy doing. That as soon as you try to scale up, you need a lot of money just to get going. But then if you're in the Joburg Theatre and you're selling 500 rand a seat tickets for West Side Story, where I was in 2017, you easily can make that money back. But you have to outlay a lot of money before anything even gets going.
Yeah.
So the problem there is then it's the people who have money who decide which story to make. And I got incredibly frustrated with telling other people's stories. And you can make money off it, but that wasn't actually giving me what I needed creatively.
Yeah.
So the hardest lesson was figuring out my value. How much is what I do worth? And the only way I could solve it was, how much responsibility do I have for you or your brand or your event? Because if it's a lot of responsibility, it comes with actually quite a high payday. Because this is a job that you have said no one else can do. You've picked me to come here and do this magic trick for you.
Yeah.
Then this is what...
Then pay me my worth.
It's not... Well, here's the thing. It's not what I struggled with, what I'm worth. That's what the service is worth.
I see.
Because there are so few creatives out there that are doing it at a top level consistently. And those people all started out as people doing it at a low level with talent consistently.
Consistently. Mm. That's the name of the
game. That's something that's come out quite a lot actually in our episode so far, is you can have the talent, but it takes consistency. It takes showing up. Things that are actually, they're not rocket science. They're difficult to do in a sense, but they don't cost you anything. And being reliable, showing up on time.
But also being consistent when nothing is happening.
Yes.
When you're not earning any money and still, you know, forging ahead.
What are you doing with your time? You know, it's so easy to fall into, I'm going to sit on the couch and watch some movies because that's research. I'm researching what these actors are doing. I'm just going to wait for the next job to come up. Or you could sit there and be like, okay, I am going to watch these movies, but I'm going to watch these three specific movies because I want to learn the monologues that this actor has done. And I want to do them, and I want to record them on my phone, and I want to play them back. And I want to see whether I could do the things that he was doing, or what story am I? But so there's so much that you, let's say you're an actor, that's how you improve your craft. If you're a sketcher or a painter, be painting or sketching every day. Even if you're in your 9-to-5 office, marginalia, just keep going. Never put your creative spark aside in order to get something done for the man and then come back to your spark. Your spark travels with you. You can't be fanning it into flame all the time. But don't try and put it out. You'll just burn your fingers.
Fezega, you said your first business failed. I just want you to point out two reasons why it failed, because now you own Ingwe Studios. What has been the difference between those two businesses?
You know, I think the biggest difference for me was finding out who I am and what I want to do. Initially, I felt as though I wasn't operating from a place of authenticity. I didn't know how I wanted to make my mark. And I think through growing and through understanding what it is I want to do, and through learning about myself and about the industry itself, I was able to come to a place where I knew that I wanted to create my own work and I wanted to own my own work. And this is the way that I was going to do it, through Ingwe Studios and through the message that I want to bring from Ingwe Studios, which is very deeply rooted in stories that tell Indigenous traditions and Indigenous stories about where I come from and who I am and where my ancestors come from. It was really a journey of getting rid of all the noise and being at the center of who I am. And that is what I want to bring into the world.
So with Ingwe Studios, one could say that you were intentional about it. You weren't just making this work for the sake of being in the industry, but you had something to say that you felt mattered, that you have to share it with the world.
Absolutely. I would definitely agree with that, because once you find what it is that you want to say, it's easier to go out there and do the research and educate yourself about how to put yourself onto the trajectory to be able to bring your message across.
I want to just say something on that. I think that's so fascinating because probably at face value, you know, if you were to see the two ideas next to each other, or the two businesses next to each other, you would think the YouTube idea would work better.
Yeah.
Because there's so many different reasons maybe why it didn't work as well as you thought it might. But I do think doing something that feels authentic is a really important part of doing something that works, because I think there's just there's a different part of yourself that you bring in that process, and you can really back what you're doing, and you feel very maybe a bit more confident in pushing it because you actually know that it is something that comes very innately, or very like it's a big part of who you are as a person, which is what you said. So yeah, I think that's like a really interesting like
intention.
Yeah,
You feel more rooted in yourself. Yeah. And even when you fail, you still want to keep going because it feels like it's something much bigger than yourself.
Yeah. Speaking about starting this business, of course, you need capital or seed money to begin anything. You were saying, Brendan, as well, that, you know, you to do a production, there's so many other costs involved besides, you know, putting on the play. Mm-hmm. I want to go to funding. I have realized that there is also a method to getting funding. You can't just apply and then they read your work and then they, you know, give you the funding.
Hand it over. Yeah.
The, you know, and the discrepancies are in the actual form that you sign. Fezega, what has been your experience with getting funding, and how have you cracked the system?
Everybody who has ever tried to go for funding, we all feel like our ideas are the best and they're going to get to the panel and they are going to be blown away. You know, I've got the next Hollywood blockbuster movie. But it was very humbling in the beginning when these rejection letters were piling up, and I was very demoralized and I was very emotional at the time, but it didn't deter me. And I knew that I obviously did not possess the skills to be able to put together winning proposals and presentations. Mm. So I had to go out there and get the knowledge. And one of the resources that was near to me was the Durban Film Festival. It happens every year and they have a lot of programs. So I applied for one of their programs. And that really opened up my mind, and it opened up the world of filmmaking and how filmmakers all over the world are all gunning for funding and these funding institutions, and how to put together winning proposals. And that was really the beginning.
Was that the Durban Film Mart?
So there's two. There's the Durban Film Festival, which is DIFF, the Durban International Film Festival. And then there's also the Durban Film Mart. And I've been in both programs. And that is really how you really develop the skills and the acumen to be able to put together proposals, and to also cultivate your stories in a way that resonates with the funders, institutions and bodies.
Yeah,
and it's not to say that you're changing the way or the story that you want to tell, but you're tweaking it so that it can resonate with the audience that they want to resonate with. And I think it does help you along your journey as a filmmaker, because filmmaking is not something that you do in a vacuum. It's something that you do to share with people. So it really helps you to speak the language of people. And I think, you know, since then I've been able to crack the code of finding funding, but I'm still working on cracking the code of getting international funding. Yeah, I'm almost there. I'm not there yet. But locally, you know, it's something that I've been able to really hone in. And although it is a process, it takes time, putting in your application, getting the funding, creating the work, putting it out there. But once you really develop that skill, you have it, and you have it for life.
Yeah. And so while you're busy putting together these winning proposals, how are you eating? How are you paying rent? Take us through that, because that's also another side that, you know, we don't speak of. I remember having to move back home after thinking I'd make it big at SABC in Joburg after I graduated, only to discover that I was number 500 and something in the audition, trying to get, you know,
get
a background role. And I did not take that well at like 20. And so my parents were like, you know what, while you're figuring yourself out, come back home. And it was such a blow to me to be like, oh my word, I'm not good enough. I'm not talented. I need to go and rethink. What if I'm not meant to be an actor? So you, on the other hand, are now, you have the story, but you don't have the capital to make it. How are you sustaining yourself while putting together the proposals?
I can relate to what you just said so much because, as I said, it is a process and it's not something that you think you're going to make the first film and you think, oh, I want to blow up after this and it doesn't, nothing happens. So one of the ways that I've been able to cultivate a life for myself is you kind of need to balance between the creative side of filmmaking and also the corporate and service side of filmmaking, which is where my experience as a YouTube filmmaker, you could say, comes in. I'm able to do videography and photography for people. That's when you get clients, you're able to get income and you're able to pay some of your bills. And you also need to be open to taking a lot of freelance work that you may not want to take. I've had to develop skills as a line producer. Line producing is very stressful. It's a very stressful place to be in, but it's critical skills that are needed within the country. So, it's a place that you can develop in and that you can make money in, and just being able to diversify your skill set as in the film industry. I'm passionate about writing, but unfortunately, writing is not going to put food on the table quickly, especially when you're still, working
starting
towards,
out. Yeah.
Your break. Yes. So you need to be able to develop skills in, places like line producing, in places like videography, cinematography, editing, which are places that I've been able to really work in.
Yeah. Brendan, you said that when you first got to the Baxter, you were moving the set for...
Probably not also the glamorous life you imagined.
Like I said, it was, for me, the reason I auditioned for that role and took the job, because they could have had their stagehands doing it, but they decided they wanted actors to do it because they wanted it done in a very specific way. Mm. And none of the established actors in town wanted to touch it because they're like, well, I don't want to be the one guy there who's not got any lines.
Yeah.
So they targeted graduating students. And so I was just lucky to fall into that. But the reason I took it, I knew it was going to be lots of thankless hours just sitting there in a rehearsal room watching these incredible actors work.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, this is hours sitting in a rehearsal room watching these incredible actors work.
Wow.
I looked at how they approached their script. I looked at how they prepared. I looked at what they were doing between things. I looked at how they dealt with conflicts with one another and solved creative disagreements.
Yeah.
I would say if you want to get into film and be a film actor, you absolutely shouldn't be an extra for a very long time. But if you've never been on a film set before, take any extra job you can find and do it once. See what it looks, know what it is to go to the craft table or to find your way through a wardrobe, to be on time, to take your background direction, to feel that pressure as we're getting, okay, everybody be quiet, we're rolling. And there's the clap of the thing and suddenly everyone's all charged. How do you go there and be relaxed? How do you go there and bring the energy that you are attempting to bring? How do you bring your character's world and not get stuck in this very, oh my goodness, I'm on a set world? Like the first time you get on a horse, I blushed like a schoolgirl for 20 minutes. I couldn't act like Alexander the Great because I was
I'm on a horse.
I'm on a horse,
Yeah.
So there are these things that you cannot know until you physically experience them. So if you want to get into theater, start by moving some sets, chat to some people that are busy doing something and just steal with your eyes.
My question was going to be becoming a working actor, which I want to laugh at, especially because we're in South Africa and all actors I feel have, come across the same hurdle where you get your first big role and it's massive and the PR team is marketing you across radio stations and television and you're the it thing. And then it goes quiet.
Yeah.
And so how did you sustain yourself in those moments where you weren't necessarily getting acting work?
So there is I can't remember who it was who said it to me towards the end of drama school, but it was very true words. They said, it doesn't matter how talented you are. no matter how exceptional you are at doing this thing that you want to do with the rest of your life for money, there will come a time where there just isn't work for you. Mm. They don't need someone like you to fill that. There just will be 6 months where you will have no work. So save like it.
Sure.
Be prepared for there to be a time where there isn't actually money coming in. And when that isn't happening, don't panic. Use that time to you've got now this runway of 3 months or 6 months, however well you've been able to save. And then let's say there is really nothing going on. Fine. Find a one-man show that you could do. Like, I'm a classically trained Shakespearean actor. Take a bunch of monologues and just put them to get one director, and your set is just a chair, and you're going to put it on at a cafe for people who pay $20 to come in at the door. That is still money coming in. And if you've learned these monologues well and you're interpreting them well, you could move it from that cafe to a larger stage. So like, you don't have to start with the Broadway production.
Yeah.
You start, you have the dream, but now what can you actually do?
Start where you are with what you have.
Because it's so easy to get paralyzed.
Yes.
So much of it is outside of your control. But there is still a lot of stuff that is within your control. So everything that you can control, try and become aware of it and try and control it. And everything else, just let it go.
Yeah.
You can't, if the shot doesn't look good, that's the DOP's job. The director's job. That's not you.
You're not carrying the whole thing.
Well, not only that, you've got to define for yourself. So what does the success look like? Let's say I've got a big audition that I'm going to. Success cannot be getting the job. That's completely out of my hands. Success is going there and having a really good audition.
Yeah.
Like doing this thing, this piece of text or this character in a way that I appreciate doing, not that they appreciate. I'm doing it for me. They are watching it. They're there. But in terms of success, it's how I feel within my body through this performance. Did I do the things that I wanted to do with this text or not? And if I did, I succeeded.
Can I pick up on something that both you have mentioned in your answers that you've just given? And it's maybe not a word that we associate with this field, and I think it should be, but I want to hear, what role has financial literacy played in your journey? Fizeka, I'd love to hear from you. And you kind of mentioned how you'd learned to put budgets together for your films. Have you applied those things in your personal life? Like, what does financial literacy mean as a creative, do you think?
Yes. So it's very important. You know, when I first started out, you're all creative and you haven't really developed skills in the area of business, understanding business, understanding money, understanding how that world works. And, you know, being able to develop skills in those areas you have to know how to budget, right? You have to know how to budget. And even after you've budgeted, you go on to set, things go wrong and you go over budget and you need to know how to problem solve in those areas. So, you know, you're able to take those skills and you're able to apply them in your own life, essentially. I budget for everything. I have spreadsheets for everything. Knowing how much money you have and knowing how you want to spend your money and where you want to spend your money, and also being able to problem solve and having a relationship with money that's not, you're not afraid of it, you're not ignoring it, but you are, you know, engaging with it. And being a producer has helped me to feel very comfortable with money that's able to seep into other areas of my life.
That's so good. What about you, Brendan? What does that look like for you?
Well, I had to get fairly financially literate because as I came out of university, I had this student loan pay off now. So the way my student loan was structured is that while I was busy studying, I had to pay like a set amount of interest per month, which was capped at a very low rate. And my mom said, I will help you with that while you're studying. But as soon as I finished studying, because I worked a pizza delivery job all the way through studying to try and like pay for my studies and food and things like that. But I actually had to quit in fourth year because I couldn't rehearse and perform. And the guy literally calls me. He's like, hey man, you meant to be on shift now. I'm like, no dude, I took this day off 2 weeks ago. I'm 2 minutes away from going on stage doing Hamlet. I'm playing Claudius. Yeah, it's a little theater. Come on by. It's like, well, if you don't come in, you're fired. It's like, I quit. Goodbye. And so I had to take that over from my mom because I knew it was a financial burden on her. And so I needed to find a way to not where some people talk about financial literacy. It's what do you do with money once you already have it? Yeah. The financial literacy that I need to learn was how to hold on to money. Mm. And Fezeka said a very important word there. It's budget. Mm. So what I recommend everybody does, even if you're not a creative, just for 1 month, don't think about it. Don't change anything. But literally write down where every little penny goes. All the money that comes through your hands, where does it all go? And at the end of the month, you're going to be amazed, number one, at how much money passed through your hands.
Yeah.
Mm. And secondly, at where these cumulative totals are now. Because you look, so how much did I spend on petrol? How much did I spend that much on rounds of tequila at this pool bar? Wow. And so you need to, it's very easy when you are in a high pressure situation, you know, you're not getting work, you are young, you feel like, you know what, I just need to let loose. I need to yeah. enjoy myself. And you're not wrong.
Enjoy life.
I worked until I had a certain amount of money in my bank account after I'd paid off the loan, and then I would just travel until I was literally broke. And then I would come back and I'd be broke, and I'd work until I had that amount of money again, and then I'd just go traveling again. I would recommend it to anyone in a heartbeat, as long as you don't have kids or pets. However, you cannot only prioritize the now. If you can prioritize the later, even if it's just tomorrow or just next week, you can start looking at it like, you know what? I want to do a show at Makana Festival next year.
Yeah.
So if I put $500 away per month over this time, I'm going to have 12 grand that can maybe do the accommodation and the transport just for me. And you can start looking at, oh, you know what? Maybe I go out 3 weekends of the month or two weekends of the month, or when I go out, this is my limit. Mm. And my friends must just know I'm not working at the moment. You can buy me drinks. Remember when I had money and I bought you drinks? And so you do exist in a community. Yeah. Do not get isolated. Don't feel like, well, I've got no money. I can't go out. I can't see my friends. Creativity also dies in darkness.
So
you can keep reaching out. Keep, even if you are dead broke, you can be sitting reading free ebooks at a library, or you can be getting books lent to you by people. Like the more you digest of other people's art, the richer your own art becomes.
Yeah, I like the part where you said don't only budget for the now, have future goals, you know, in your budgets, well, like maybe a production that you would want to put up. I actually haven't thought of that. So I budget for like this month, and then once that's done.
And even if you can't pick like, okay, it's going to be this production.
Yeah.
I want to try, put it in the question mark box. Put in the, what am I going to, once that hits a certain magical number, I can treat my body, or I can treat my soul, or I can try and take my career forward. But that's, I'm working towards having the freedom to do that, because the huge knife's edge of being a creative freelancer, I mean, when you own your own production company like Fezeka, there's a lot of like daily meat and bones stuff that you have to do and keep doing to maintain it. But when you are like myself, where you're working from event to event, or film to film, or theatrical production to theatrical production, it's feast and famine. You're going to end up being very busy and making lots of money, and then you're going to end up being not very busy
and not having
lots of money. It's feast and famine. However, what you get, because it's there's huge uncertainty. You're never gonna really know when that paycheck's coming in, or that there is a lot of uncertainty. But what you are getting for that is freedom. When no one's paying you to spend your time somewhere, you can spend your time wherever you like, however you like. You can be growing your community. You can be growing your soul. You could be growing your garden. But if you've made that pact, you want the freedom, use it.
Mm. I think that's so good, because if you have an entrepreneurial mindset and you treat your endeavors like a business, whether you're a freelancer or you're doing this through a more like a production company like you, Fezeka, it's almost knowing and anticipating that feast and famine and planning your finances accordingly, because then it doesn't come as a surprise. Maybe the first few years it does, but like over time, you'll start to notice patterns probably.
Yes. Yeah.
And I also used to run a production company. And I did. Over time, I started seeing sort of cycles of how things would go.
Mm.
And sort of like it was in audio production. And from December, mid-December to February, everyone would go completely silent, you know, because a lot of our clients were corporates, that kind of thing. And so the first year, panic. Second year, still panic. Third year, prepared.
Expected.
Yeah, expected, because you're starting to see these kind of patterns. And obviously, that's not science, exact science. Yeah. There are other factors to it. But I think that's a great reason to track your finances, because maybe, you know, it's like collecting data.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then over time being able to see like what this looks like.
They call it seasons in the commercial word. In season and yes, out of season.
Yes, like off season. You know?
Yeah. But I suppose to wrap it up, how to turn your passion into income is that maybe don't focus on the income to begin with, focus on the work. And I like what you said about when you are not, you know, being hired or working on a production, you can create your own work. And the reward isn't necessarily the money. Yes, we need the money, but the reward is that it's freedom. Mm. You are doing this thing and you own your own time. So actually, that's, you know, the value that you get out of being a creative. What are you doing with this time? Mm-hmm. And are you using your time in a valuable way and that will give back to you? Because once you do the work, as our other guests have said, it starts to speak for itself. And then the income just
it follows.
Mm. After
the,
that.
The one thing leads slowly to the other.
To the other.
And sometimes it's tiny steps, but it's always little forward.
But you have to be moving.
Yes. You need to be lifting your foot up out of the mud.
Moving. Yeah. So good.
For 30 years, the V&A Waterfront has been a champion of the arts. Our Immersive Artist Alliance program offers hands-on experience and skills development across various disciplines, including sculpture, videography, and music production. Exclusive networking events and creativity workshops also provide more opportunities for artists to connect, collaborate, and showcase their work. Sound like your kind of thing? Apply to join our vibrant community at the link in the show notes and join our WhatsApp community. We'd love to welcome you.
So you will have heard at the end of some of our episodes that we ask you to like and subscribe. The reason that we're doing that is because we would love you to be part of our growing Creative Allies community. And by liking and subscribing, it shows that you firstly like us, which is good, right?
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. I like to be liked. I like liking other people too.
There we go. And it also means that any new episodes or any new snippets will download to your phone immediately. So go on and hit that subscribe button.
Like, follow, share, subscribe, everything.
As part of each episode, we have questions from our Artist Alliance community. So these are young creatives who are very much at the beginning of their journeys, and these are their questions. So I'm going to pick one. This comes from an event that was held recently, and I'm going to ask the same question to both of you, and let's just do a quick fire round answer. So when do we get to a point where we can fully commercialize our skills and creativity and not worry about having side hustles to sustain us? I'll start with you, Brendan.
Okay. Well, your side hustle is just a main hustle waiting to happen. Your main hustle will become a side hustle when one of your side hustles starts making more money.
There we go.
For me, it was acting in theater, acting in film, doing stand-up comedy, which morphed into emceeing, hosting burlesque circuses, and that eventually morphed into just doing completely vanilla MC, super vanilla. Hello, my name is Brendan. You are welcome. Good night. Pay is just as much as putting on a fat suit and sweating for 4 hours a night, you know? So I would say, do not make a side hustle out of something that you do not want to be doing. Mm. It's still taking your time. It's still taking your energy. It's still taking your creativity. Your side hustles become your main hustle when they start making bank. Mm. And if you have to get a job so that you can be creatively side hustling on the side, that's fine. That's the job. And one day the job will fall away and the side hustle becomes the job.
The main thing.
Mm. So good. What about you, Fizeka? Any thoughts on that?
You know, I have to agree. I think your side hustles, you never really get to a place where you can let go of your side hustles. They are part of your journey. One of the, you know, the major things that I would put into that is when you are doing your creative work, one of the main themes for me has been ownership and being able to own your IP, because that will really give you creative freedom to be able to let go of any side hustles. So hone into your creative craft, but also hone into knowing how you can go about to own your creative craft, because a lot of these broadcasters and streamers, they know the value of intellectual property, and that's why they deny us that right when it comes to our work. So understand the landscape and work towards that, and use your side hustles in the meantime to be able to develop your skills, to be able to have money coming in, and to just keep you engaged and keep you growing in your craft.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
I don't have side hustles. I have
their
three
main
jobs.
Hustles. Yeah. No, I have yeah, I don't actually like that term. Yeah. I'm just this is like literally a direct quote from the
I
question, which
jobs.
Is why I used it.
When
yeah.
I read the question earlier, I literally laughed out loud and my son said, "Why are you laughing, Dad?" I'm like, I'll tell you when you're older.
I have three jobs. So because yeah. I also get the question a lot. So when I do, you know, podcasting stuff and radio stuff, people are like, "Oh, have you left comedy?" I'm like, "No. I also do comedy just on this day. But today, this is my role. This is my job. Mm. On the weekend, I'm a comedian. And then on a different day, I'm a voiceover artist, but they're all working in tandem."
Yes.
And what I've noticed is that if the voiceover work is quiet, the writing work will pick up.
Mm.
If that is quiet, the comedy will suddenly, you know, be the main source of income. So at any given point, I think it works well as a creative to do several things, of course, that you enjoy and that you are talented in.
Yes.
Because like Brendan said, it will be quiet at some point. But if you're doing three different things, they can't all be quiet.
Yeah. And three different things that you love doing that are exactly. engaging your creativity. And I love what you said about developing your skills.
Mm.
Like it's a side hustle, so it's not, I want to be a movie star, but right now I'm going to go and be the extra because I really like this director and I want to learn. You're getting something more out of it and you're getting the cash to keep you going into the future.
Yeah, it's not this very quick overnight thing. It takes a lifetime to build these things.
20 years.
Yeah, 20 years.
20 years.
Just before we go into the last bit of the podcast, can you give us a voice that you really enjoyed doing in one of your movies or cartoons or just one line?
Interesting. Well, I think, funnily enough, because I'm a giant man, right? And I speak in this way all the time. So one of the voices...
This is not put on.
This is not put on. No, this is... when I speak to my children, I intentionally like pitch my voice up. And to be honest, I'm still even pitching my voice up now because I speak with my natural timbre. Everyone thinks that you're busy being an idiot and they can hardly hear you. So I put a little bit of brightness in it. I bring in the head resonance to just like be nice and clear when I come through. But one of my favorite voices to do, I had a challenge once upon a time. What was the voice of the smallest character I could make? So,
hello, my name is Brendan and I'm very, very small. But I'm here today to sell you a pen.
Wow.
And that those little things. So for me, it's about like the dynamism and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was in a movie, SEAL Team 6 or whatever. And it was, I got to play a seal next to Lo Fenter and Rob Van Furen, who are Cornet and Twaki. And they were friends of mine through comedy. That so little bits like stick out. But I would say the voice that I'm really glad that I locked down, and this is my advice to any young voice actors out there: when you think of a voice, try and think of a word, an adjective or a verb that describes that voice so you can go into it. Like right now I'm talking in chocolate.
Ooh.
This is chocolate. But if I want to go up into champagne's got a little bit more bubble. Yeah. It's a little bit more. So you just find these different tones, and different commercials will always call for different tones.
Yeah.
And if you are capable, because they'll try and put you in a box. Oh, you're the person who does the terms and conditions apply.
Yeah.
But if you can show them something else, they will always think of you for something else. And then eventually they'll hire you. They're like, oh, we've got an ad with three voices. Well, now we need Brendan, because Brendan can be like, hi, Bob. How are you? No, I'm fine. Fricky, how are you? Hey, guys, have you seen what's going on outside? And that's a skill that I hone, making just funny noises to myself all the time, because I love making funny noises.
You know, we'll be here for longer than we need to be. I could listen to you go on and on and on. In each episode, we ask you to write a letter to your younger self. What would you have said with all the knowledge that you have now to your younger self? We'll start with you, Fezeka.
Okay. I don't know. I think this letter might be too long. Okay?
That's okay. You go for it. Okay.
This is your time.
This is your letter.
Little Fezeka. Think of little Fezeka.
Okay. Letter to my younger self. Dear Fezeka, I know how you feel. The fear, the anxiety, the stress of wondering if it'll all work out. I encourage you to put it all in a jar and let it go. Let go of that need to control and surrender to the beauty of the journey. Uyiciko, a creative, you're on the path less traveled. It will be tumultuous, but it will make you resilient. While I won't tell you everything and defy the rules of time travel, I will tell you this. 1. Learn as much as you can about the industry that you're in. You won't be able to develop a meaningful strategy from a place of ignorance. Knowledge is power. 2, network is your net worth, but not in the way that you think. Your film school friends and the colleagues that you're going to meet along the way are the network. Cultivate those relationships. The young, the hungry, and the passionate will be the ones to contribute to your creative journey in unexpected ways. 3, bring the audience in. Throughout time, Indigenous cultures all over the world, artists have been the communicators and the messengers. The audience needs something. It needs healing. It needs education. It needs insight into the relationships that we share. Or we need to understand critical issues through the vehicle of entertainment. The work needs to teach us something about ourselves as the human collective. Once you understand that and that you are the bridge, that will be your golden ticket. You got this. With love.
Oh my goodness. Goosebumps.
Not too long.
Yeah, I'm always left out of words when I hear these
letters. They are always so emotive and resonant. Eh? Yeah. They resonate.
Brendan Murray.
So Brendan Murray, you might hear some papers moving because
it's a real letter, and Brendan
had a crazy morning. So Brendan ended up leaving the really nice handwritten letter to himself at home next to the door, like it's there. Aww. Saying take me, and I didn't, because there's just a whole bunch of reasons why. But I had all my notes and I've rewritten it. So please excuse me if you hear me turning pages. Yeah, that's cool. Theater of the mind. This is a very long letter. Sup, B. You know that joke about the difference between a pizza and a creative freelancer? That a pizza can feed a family of four? Well, here you are, 21 years later, doing just that. Feeding a family of four. You have a mortgage. Dude, you spend more per month just staying alive than you used to spend maybe in 6, and it's okay. How did I do this? Well, be on time, be prepared, be kind. And then you'll never be short of people wanting to work with you again. The smallest unit of our entire industry is the human being. Value them. Develop those connections, because they will be there on the next job or the job after that. We are all working together. Be creative in how you exercise your creativity, and then you can always find work. For example, you're really good at Shakespeare. Think about an advert as like a sonnet, a love song to money. Just help this corporate cuck find his sweetheart. Be bold. No one ever lost a job for making mistakes while the cameras were rolling. It's a safe space. You only regret the shots you didn't take. Creating something is something that you do regardless. Remember the words of Michael Caine. They pay you to wait. The acting you do for free. You need to find people who need creative solutions, explore creative hobbies, and then monetize them. Everyone gets started with a mix of talent, skill, and luck. But you only need talent and skill to keep working after that. And if you're prepared on time and kind, you can kind of make your own luck. Read. Watch. Attend when other people are trying to make art. You will always see something you've never seen before. You will always learn something that has remained hidden up until that point. Culture exists in conversation with itself. Whether you are making dinner or making love, you can be making art. Whenever you get the chance to do it, enjoy doing it, because that's why we do it. Follow the fun, buddy. You got this.
Follow the fun.
Follow the fun.
I'm going to stick to that one. Wow, 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 wow. What a funny letter. I don't think we've had a humorous letter
before. I love
before.
That one.
He would not have taken me seriously otherwise.
Yes.
Who is this pompous ancient man?
Thank you so much, Fezeka, for joining us in this conversation. Thank you so much, Brendan. As per usual, like you say, we are watching and learning every time we get in conversation with different creatives from various disciplines and industries. And what you've given us today is invaluable, I'd say.
So generous. Thank you for sharing from both of your lives.
I wish you more funding, Fezega, the international funding. And Brendan, I think you're already working on a big film right now.
It's going to be coming out like next year sometime. Yeah, They're still doing post-production.
So I wish you more of those.
Thank you. No, I'm about to finish out three little jobs and go on a month's holiday with my children.
Nice. Beautiful.
It's winter. So why stress about not getting work? You know? Lean into your family. Yeah. Enjoy that time.
Yeah.
And something other people don't get.
Thank you so much for having me. I learned so much and it's been amazing listening to Brendan. You have an incredible voice.
Oh, Fezega, it's been amazing hearing you talk about your journey because there's so many resonances with so many of my friends. We're all on that same path. Your courage in the past is standing them all in good stead for the future. Thank you.
Thank you to our incredible guests for their time and willingness to share today. If you enjoyed this episode of Creative Allies, be sure to listen to other episodes in the series. Remember to hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. We speak with more inspiring guests about their career journeys and challenges and give you valuable and practical advice. Listen to learn more about how to negotiate rates, manage your finances, deal with imposter syndrome, conquer creative blocks, and more. Remember, you can join our WhatsApp channel by clicking the link in the show notes. You can also subscribe to the Artist Alliance newsletter to get the latest news. Check the show notes for the link to our website. Thank you for listening. We look forward to next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye. We ended on the same note. That's very good. The V&A Waterfront Artist Alliance program created the series in partnership with Two Stories. Podcast production by Carol Williams, with audio editing and engineering by Rebecca Van Zyl and script writing by Linda Scarborough. The music for the series is composed by Jude Brown, and episodes are recorded at Sonic Nursery Sound Studios in Cape Town.